This afternoon, I'd like to talk about some of the things that get in the way of metta, that make it easy or that make it difficult. Just to explore that a little, because you'll have noticed today that there are times when you feel connected and times when the mind is either busy or sleepy or bored or drawn into pleasant fantasies, or maybe afraid. Maybe you're aversive or grumpy or any one of a number of things, or full of doubt that this is any use at all. What point is there repeating all these phrases? And so it can really help to explore that. So just take a few breaths and release how the day has been so far. Just let go of that. And bring a kind attention to yourself just as you are right now. That's all it is, just bringing kind attention. Allowing how it is, not having to get anything right, so that we can appreciate it when there are moments of clarity, and there are, we all have them. We can miss them, but they're there, moments of beauty. And then kindness and compassion for when there's fear or doubt or irritation or grief. So we're training in having love be the default rather than judgment or aversion. Continually goodwill towards experience. So in metta, we're training in attention and in how we pay attention and in who we pay attention to and who we don't pay attention to. So it's noticing all those things. And it's an organic kind of process. By focusing attention with kindness as the background, that's what begins to grow. Even though it can take a long time, gradually the heart opens. And it's nourishing, it's healing. So it moves us into a sense of deeper connection with ourselves. And metta doesn't mean liking. It's more a deep knowing that we matter, that everyone matters, like a dignity of being. There was a school in the States that posted their rules of kindness for all the students. And the rules of kindness were: everybody gets to play, even if not everybody is your friend. Be kind to everyone on the inside and on the outside. So it's very simple. Unfortunately, not very many adults are modeling that. But that's the value that metta holds. And as the Dalai Lama says, when we don't feel valued, we naturally then feel insecure and afraid. People need to feel valued, everyone does, to feel connected, to feel that they're included. It's a natural human need to feel those things. The less valued we are, the less needed we are by the culture, the more alienated and the more fearful we feel. And so you can see how the fear and alienation grow when people feel that they don't matter, they have no value. And metta is about including and about connecting. The most powerful insight we get from our loving kindness practice is that we're all connected. We're not separate. And so it becomes easier and easier to wish well for others the more we feel we're not separate from them. and the heart is including rather than separating. And so then that's why it's this boundless friendliness to all of our experience. So not just on the outside, but beginning on the inside, no part of ourselves is left out, or no part of our experience. So the mantra of metta is this too. This too is what's here right now. One of the other mantras of our meditation practice, especially mindfulness and vipassana, is not now to the distracted mind. So we can say not now, and then this too. So it's including the balance of those mind states. So it takes courage to say this too to everything. It isn't easy to stand near to befriend difficult emotions, grief and fear and overwhelm. Difficult people and situations. It's counterintuitive to be still amidst waves of aversion. It is. It's instinctive to want to move away and to move quickly into views and judgments and opinions and assumptions rather than just stay with what's here. It's much easier to cultivate aversion than to cultivate metta. If you can try it, you'll find it's true. Well, actually, we've been doing it. Mind likes to follow the pathways it knows, and it knows aversion very well. This is from Ajahn Sumedho, one of the Thai forest teachers. He says, in cultivating metta, in the beginning, it's like looking and digging for spring water. You have to dig for quite deep, but eventually, if you dig deep enough, the water of metta starts to flow. First it trickles in droplets, and then gradually it builds up and it flows. But in the process of digging, he says, we encounter all sorts of things, frogs, snakes, maybe even gold, depending on what's in one's mind. So what we uncover depends on what's in there. He said that in the beginning there are many invaders, people we'd rather put aside. Hagar the Horrible, Broomhilda. You have to be old enough to remember who those are. But we give them metta too. We might need to return to what's easiest and most lovable. But we do need to address the difficult people from the start, because we're going to meet them from the start anyway. Isn't that true? We've met difficult people already today. So mindfulness and metta go hand in hand. And the metta helps the mindfulness not abandon what's difficult. We can forget our capacity to be here with tenderness and gentleness. And what helps is building the capacity by looking at little aversions, small irritations, rather than really big ones. For example, a couple of weeks ago, I was about to send off a really snarky email to some person that I was having difficulty with. And just as I was about to press send, a moment of metta arose and enabled me to delete it. But we have to remember that we have the capacity to do that. And so that's why we're training ourselves here to keep coming back over and over. Then it's more available when we need it in daily life. So we're planting the seeds again and again, even when it's boring. Connecting again, so that it's not something we feel, but it becomes something we do. We can live our lives from that place. And the Buddha taught it was an abiding place, metta, not just something we visit now and again. And so that's the importance of the practice. This is from a teacher, Mingyur Rinpoche. Maybe this is easier. He says, if we could learn to develop kindness and compassion towards one another, a spontaneous understanding that whatever we do to benefit ourselves must benefit others and vice versa, if we could do that, we wouldn't need laws and armies and police and guns and bombs. In other words, the best form of security we can offer ourselves is to develop an open heart. So that's to know the destructive power of ill will, to know the suffering it causes, and to respond with metta, to create more and more moments of metta. So metta, the acceptance and the tolerance, it doesn't mean indulgence. It doesn't mean that we're making, as Ajahn Sumedho says, some pink, fluffy, everything's nice kind of experience. It's more that we're accepting that hatred is here, that it can occur in every human heart. We're accepting that, but we're not letting ourselves be run by it. I was in the States, I guess a year ago, just over a year ago, when the results of the U.S. election came out, and I was teaching a retreat, and many of the people on the retreat were very upset at the results. And there was a Mexican woman there who became... She just went into a panic attack, so much fear came up for her about what might happen to her family and her friends. And so I was supporting her at different times through the retreat. And then she came to me one day, and she said that how amazed she was at the degree of hatred that came up in her. And she caught herself... with this fantasy of how she would go back to her home in Mexico and they would put up the signs of, you know, and they were all in the village she came from. There were all these sort of very wealthy houses of tourists and stuff. And they would put up these signs of, you're unwanted aliens. You know, and she could see the vengeful fantasy in her mind. And then she realized how easy it was to be moved by hatred, to be behaving in just the same way. And when she saw that, she was able to connect with kindness and compassion again, compassion for her fear, compassion for what was happening. But she said it really amazed her how quickly that can come up for us, and how important it is to be able to not let it rule us. She said, I don't want to feel filled with hatred for people. She said, I saw all these thoughts coming up in my mind as all Americans hate us, they all want to get rid of us. And she said, I know that's not true. But it was that came up for her. And so she was able to have compassion for that and see more clearly what she needed to do. So we have a tendency to reject our experience, and we can either close down and resist and deny more and more, or gradually open up to experience. Sometimes we struggle with trying to get it right, or feeling that we're not right. Our bodies aren't right, our minds aren't right, our everything around us is described as not right. And we don't like feeling that way, and so we reject ourselves for feeling that way. Or as many of my teachers have said, rather than cherishing ourselves, we hate ourselves. And with metta, we dwell on our strengths rather than our weaknesses. We turn towards goodness rather than towards the hatred. The Dalai Lama says, no matter how much we may dislike some of our characteristics and habit patterns, underneath we do wish ourselves happy, and that's a profound kind of self-love. And even if you think that you're full of self-judgment and there's no capacity to appreciate yourself, and sometimes we feel that way, underneath there is this deep wish for happiness. It's there, no matter how much it's been covered up. Again, from the Dalai Lama, metta is an antidote to this. Whenever we reflect on the fact that all beings, including ourselves, have Buddha nature, have this seed or potential for love for all of that, no matter what their situation, no matter how much it's been covered. Jane Goodall tells a beautiful story. She, as many of you probably know, she started a program called Roots and Shoots for young people. And she created farms, or she had, these were created by people that she was working with, for young people who'd been in the criminal justice system and people had kind of given up on for their behavior patterns to come to these farms. And they would each, when each young person arrived, they would be given an animal to take care of. And she describes how this one young boy came, and he had been in and out of all sorts of difficult places all his life and was filled with a lot of anger and acting out and hatred. And they gave him this big white rabbit. Actually, I don't know that it was white. It was a big rabbit, whatever it was. It was a big rabbit. And he'd never seen a rabbit before because he was an inner city kid. And so she and the counselor stood back. And at first he approached it very slowly. And then very gradually he put his hand out and he touched the rabbit. And the rabbit was a very placid rabbit and an affectionate rabbit. And it responded and he began to stroke it. And then he began to cry. And he turned and he said, "See, I didn't hurt it." And it was that in him too was that capacity for love, for caring, that he hadn't known he had. And for him to find that, to me, was really moving. So that capacity is there for everyone to form connection and to form friendship. And the Dalai Lama, I'm talking about the Dalai Lama a lot because I recently read the book that he wrote with Desmond, that is written about him and Desmond Tutu. Some of you have probably, for his 80th birthday, Desmond Tutu flew to India and they spent a week together in conversation. And the Dalai Lama said at one point during the meeting, someone asked about the depth of their friendship over many years. And the Dalai Lama took Desmond Tutu's hands and he said, "At the time of my death, I will see your face." And the Desmond Tutu is, "Thank you, thank you." And it's that degree of friendship and depth of love that's possible when we really allow our hearts to open in that way. And these are two old men who've known each other for years, teased each other, been friends to each other, and have this deep bond of appreciation that supports them, that we all need. So attachment can detract from love. When we get too attached and love becomes something we have to have, but the love of metta enhances it. The heart is open, it's not constrained. The love is unconditionally offered. And that unconditional aspect is what's so healing about it. When we start, you might have noticed when we added the category of dear friend, that the love can be conditional sometimes. We can, and I'm always giving this particular example. May you be safe, may you be happy, may you be peaceful, may you get your act together. May you start cleaning up. May you move out and get a job. But it's our definition of what might bring happiness to the other person. So it's conditional. So gradually, or we can do that to ourselves. I'll love myself when or if. And we withdraw love from ourselves if we make a mistake. We're harsh on ourselves. And the more metta there is, the more kindness there is, the more possible it becomes to make a mistake. Oh, that didn't work. Never mind, I won't do it that way again. Rather than this harshness when we make a mistake or when we think we've failed. I've always been driven by getting it right, and it's not okay to fail or to not do something. And I was doing a meditation retreat some years ago, and I was trying a practice I hadn't done before, and I just couldn't get it. It just was not happening for me. And trying and trying. And then finally I kind of gave up and just, well, I failed at this. And then this little voice came. It's good that you failed. I said, what do you mean it's good that I failed? And what opened up was just all this love. And just feeling this unconditional love for myself. And I realized that by always trying to succeed to get love, I was going in the wrong direction. And as soon as that fell away, there was all this love that was here, just in being, love for myself just for being, that wasn't conditioned by approval or anything. And it's a beautiful thing to connect with that and to remember that that's possible. And for children to have that, rather than it being conditioned on getting an A or looking a certain way or being good at sports. And even if those things aren't intentional, they get transmitted in our culture. We're only lovable if there's some kind of condition. So it was very freeing to have that experience. A love for ourselves that isn't dependent on success or becoming any particular way. So today, these resolves for well-being are gradually bringing about this kind of transformation. And it may feel like nothing is happening, but gradually it is underneath that capacity for loving ourselves just as we are. Whenever we have a moment of metta, we're practicing generosity and we're releasing grasping. So the energy of wanting is turned to generosity. And we can, when we renounce anger and aversion, we're ceasing to harm ourselves or others. And that's nourishing as well. And it's also not easy, because layers of difficult emotions can be released. We can feel present hurts, future anxieties, all these different things that emerge. Sometimes people get a mistake review on retreats, where all the things that have happened in your life and the unfinished business comes up. So you can see it's not, as I mentioned before, it's not about having a nice, blissful weekend. Much though that would be nice, and for some people it might happen. What's actually healing is to allow some of these things to be released and to move through. because even though the metta's like a magnet and it's pulling these difficulties out or allowing them to percolate out, they're being held with kindness instead of being held with judgment. So the things can be transformed instead of further conditioned and held in. So just to talk a little bit more specifically about some of the things that can block metta, because when we don't recognize them, it's really difficult to feel loving kindness practice. So it's helpful to, because when compassion and kindness are blocked, we tend to feel afraid, vulnerable, or more angry, any one of those things. And with metta, we're including all of experience rather than rejecting some of it. And the way we work with it is first of all recognize that it's there, know that it's present. Because if we don't notice it, we're going to be caught. Then we notice the attitude that we're having towards it. Because we can have aversion and then more aversion to the aversion and so forth. That's usually what happens. And then rather than specifically investigating like we would with Vipassana or insight practice, and you notice so far those of you who are familiar with RAIN, the RAIN, to recognize, notice your attitude, and investigate. Those three are still there. But instead of investigating, we're more turning away from the habit pattern and turning towards awareness and metta. We're continuing with the phrases if we can. We're feeding the beautiful qualities. So it's a little different than the invest. Both are useful, but with metta, we intentionally turn away. Not to bury it or squash it, but more to turn to what's positive. And then we keep connecting as best we can and staying with the phrases or the felt sense of metta. And that kind of allows the metta to transform and melt the difficulty. And often it releases. So for example, one of the blocks that often comes up for me is anxiety, or used to be fear. Now it's sort of down a little and more anxiety. And what will often happen is I'll find myself being drawn into and staring into the difficulty, or whatever the story is. And I could investigate where it is in the body and so forth, like I would with Vipassana, or open up to awareness, to the larger thing, and bring in metta, be aware of metta. May it be held in kindness. Well, fear is here. Oh, it's hard to feel fear. That's compassion. Having compassion. And often what happens with that is there's an opening, and there's a sense of the world expanding. And that gets diluted and releases more, and it's really helpful. It's as though metta shines a light on what the obstructions are, and metta brings in a softening that can allow release of it. So when there's less judgment or blame or harshness about what's here, we're less afraid to look at it. We can see the difficulties and understand them more. And also the mindfulness and wisdom reveals that the fear or the anger or the depression or whatever it is not who we are. It's just a mind state. It's just passing through. And so we're kind to ourselves while grumpiness is passing through. We're kind to ourselves while grief is passing through. So there's a holding of whatever state there is and letting it move through and be transformed. So that's very helpful. One of the ways metta supports that when there are those difficult feelings. One of the teachers, long ago, Shantideva says, look at everyone you see with an open, loving heart. And we can think, this is not possible. They're unlovable, or some part of me is unlovable. I cannot look at them with an open, loving heart. Might be all right for the Dalai Lama, but not for me. But we can sort of modify that a little bit. We can say instead, may I be safe and well in the midst of this. May I be held in kindness in the midst of this aversion. So that we're protecting ourselves in a way. And it really means that we need a strong basis of loving kindness towards ourselves before we can spread that out to others. And the Buddha said, who loves themselves will never harm another. When we have that depth of unconditional self-love, it's the basis from which we can offer unconditional love. Because when we don't, the shadow gets projected out. Thomas Merton says it's not only our hatred of others that's dangerous, but above all, our hatred of ourselves. Particularly that hatred that's so deep and powerful, we don't consciously face it. And when that happens, it's this which makes us see our own evil in others and be unable to see it in ourselves. And so then it gets projected out, the axis of evil and all the other things that we hear, the other is bad, gets projected out. And metta helps us separate out anger, so that we see clearly what's underneath it, fear, insecurity, perceived injustice, all the difficult things often are what's underneath anger. And metta means not dwelling in aversion, but being kind even to what's terrible, developing unshakable tolerance. It's again, not easy. And we practice where it is easier, where there are things that are small that are irritating us. And I find that really helpful. There's some, we'll be chanting these phrases at the end of the day, but there's a particular one that I find helpful. And it's, may I abide in well-being. And then it goes on, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from affliction, in freedom from anxiety, and may I abide in well-being in myself. And so when I find myself getting really irritated with someone for something small, it's, oh, may I abide in well-being, in freedom from hostility. It helps. A retreat once I was doing walking meditation and someone was vacuuming outside the room and was echoing, oh, may I abide in freedom from hostility. And you can do that for others. May you abide in well-being, in freedom from hostility, etc., etc., in freedom from affliction, in freedom from harm, anxiety. And those four words are the words that the translation from the Pali words that are safety, that's being free from hostility, anxiety, so that's being free from anxiety, being happy, free from affliction, being free from physical illness, being unwell, and then being content, being peaceful. And so that's where they come from. And if we can't say to someone, may you be, who's a difficult person, may you be happy, we can say, may you be free from ill will. May you be free from hostility. May you be free from harm. Even if we can't say, may you be happy. Another Sri Lankan phrases are, may I be harmless to all beings. May they be harmless towards me. May all beings be harmless to all beings. And so that's wishing everyone free from harm. So metta as goodwill. Sometimes we think it means having to like somebody, but really it's being free from aversion. If we're simply free from aversion, we're practicing metta. So there's gradations of metta, from simply being free from aversion to feeling deep love, like the Dalai Lama was expressing for Desmond Tutu. So another thing that's a real barrier to our metta is fear. Fear, worries, anxieties of any sort for our survival, for our security, all those things, separation, alienation, all those things bring up fear. And metta is really a strong antidote to fear. In fact, fear was the original Metta Sutta. The Buddha taught the monks metta as an antidote and protection against fear. Fear from the demons in the forests and the tigers and snakes and so forth, and a protection against fear of their own inner demons and snakes and tigers. And so it's protection. And we need to be with fear the way we'd be with a child who's afraid, present, loving, caring for that person. I'm here for you. Just that kind of space. It decreases the fear of fear when fear arises. I'm here for you. Sokni Rinpoche, a Tibetan teacher, tells a lovely story about when he was in Kuala Lumpur, and he hadn't been out of Tibet very much at that point, and someone took him to these two towers in Kuala Lumpur. They're huge, many, many stories, and there's a glass bridge between them, and it's glass, so you can see below, thousands, however many hundreds of feet below you can see. And he had to walk across this bridge. And he became paralyzed with fear. He couldn't go across. And so he said to himself, you know, I'm a Tibetan Lama. I should be able to do this. But he couldn't. And so then he sort of gave himself some, you know, tension, sat with it for a little bit. And he had this memory of when he was a young boy leaving Tibet. They had to cross, you know, the mountains. And of falling in steep places and his fear of falling and how terrified he was as a little boy. And so he thought, okay, now I've seen the origin of this, I should be able to walk across. Nope, he still couldn't walk across. So what's missing? And then he realized, oh, I need to be kind to the fear. And so he said, the fear is real. And so he was kind to that. But it's not true that I'm going to fall through this glass bridge. Hundreds of people are walking by. It isn't true. The fear's real, but it's not true now. And so he took care of the fear with kindness. And so it's whenever there's fear, being kind to the fear, taking care of it, not judging for having it. And so metta is allowing mindfulness to be big enough to hold the fear, to know that the fear's conditioned. It, when the conditions that created the fear fade away, the fear will fade away. Then we're feeding kindness rather than feeding fear. And so the more we can feed kindness in our lives and amongst each other, rather than fueling fear, which happens so much in our culture, the more ease and the more security there will be. And then with doubt, when we have doubt about the practice, about what we're doing, about there's no point in all this, it's confusing, we're indecisive about phrases or whatever, it's staying with the felt sense of metta anyway, connecting and sustaining, just keeping on going. This is really hard right now, but I'm here for myself with kindness. And the doubt goes, meh, 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 or yada, yada, or whatever it does. It's hard right now. May I be held in kindness. And staying with that really supports us. Being gentle, being with metta. Another phrase I find helpful, may I be free from limiting beliefs. Limiting beliefs about myself, about whatever it is. And allowing don't know mind. We don't know if the metta is helping. But if we stop doing it, it won't. So it enables us to focus on what's good rather than scanning for what's wrong. If we're constantly scanning for what's wrong, that's going to perpetuate it. And we know that from our experience. When we focus on what's wrong in our lives, in ourselves, our practice, in the world, in our relationships, in our work, whatever it is, we get depressed, get dragged down, and we can re-traumatize ourselves and begin. And if we judge ourselves for feeling depressed and like that, then we feel hopeless. And so it grows, and we can feel despairing. And that's when we need to bring kindness to ourselves just as we are. And just the ongoing practice of metta, even if we think it's not working, can help transform and melt and slowly move us from that place. Kitesaro, some of you probably know of him. He's a monk. He's Western. He comes from Tennessee, and he trained in Asia for many years. And he went back to England, and he was going into some of the prisons, the high security prisons in England. And one day he happened to be there, and he was, you know, he was wearing his robes, and he was doing loving kindness practice. And the guards began mocking them. And mocking him and calling, you know, Harry, Harry, you know, Hare Krishna kind of stuff. And they were really being very kind of cruel in their mocking. And one of the men says, I can't do this. I have no kindness towards them at all. If I could, I'd kill them. You know, he was very angry and hurt. And so Kitesaro just said, and we include that too. May we have kindness for that too, for the depth of that hatred. May we have kindness for that. And the man began to weep. And there was just this collective kindness from everyone towards this person. And Kitesaro said, you could just feel the room as he continued offering kindness to all of them for whatever they were experiencing. And he said, it felt like it was the guards that were imprisoned, and that they, in their radiating of metta, they were the ones whose hearts were free. And it was very powerful. I can't tell the story as well as he can, but it was just the magic of that really holding however it is, the depth of how it is. So metta can shift where the mind dwells. It's a unifying force in the mind. It brings things together and pulls us into a place of goodwill. It's a training for our whole life, and it actually can make a difference. It's made a huge difference in my life to find that more and more of the time, the default is kindness and love, and there's openness rather than contraction, and there can be moments of love for the contraction. I lose it, it comes back again. There's an increasingly pliant way of being in the world, more tolerance, and more tolerance for my own intolerance. It's transforming, and there's a lighter heart. So it's a beautiful way of being, and I'd like to end with this quote under here somewhere. Can't find it. Here it is. This is again from Mingyur Rinpoche, and he says, "Unconditional kindness, gentleness and affection born of openness and intelligence that can be in, can't read my own writing, can be, gathered into a bright burning flame that warms the whole world." So the unconditional kindness and this gentleness can gather together into this flame that warms the whole world. And it stands beyond all the names we call ourselves and the roles we play. It's not manufactured, and nor can it be destroyed, because it emerges spontaneously from the inseparability of emptiness and clarity, which are themselves uncreated. So with this basic sense of well-being, if we nurture this sense of well-being properly, we can extend to a kinship with all other living beings. So it's that bringing together, and it lights up the whole world. It moves us into connection with everyone. So let's just sit for a moment. May we all receive the deepest well-being and happiness. May we all receive ease, kindness, and well-being. Allowing that to soak in through the whole of your being.